We cross the state, listening for music and poetry from South Dakotans. From SDPB, today is Friday, April 11th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we begin with a preview of a performance connected to Christian Holy Week, which begins on Sunday. We'll consider the history of the St. John Passion and ask why the composer, Johann Sebastian Bach, would never have heard this performed with the mastery we expect today. Then we will check in with the state's poet laureate, Bruce Roseland. He joins us from his ranch in north central South Dakota, where April is more beautiful than poet T.S. Eliot ever imagined. We'll hear Roseland's Prairie Prayer, plus a moment in sound from the Black Hills. Chaitanya Sky is later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Christians are entering Holy Week this weekend. A mix of sacred music, drama, and reflection is taking place next Tuesday. As part of the Sacred Arts series at the Cathedral of St. Joseph in Sioux Falls, the Augustana University School of Music presents Johann Sebastian Bach's St. John Passion. Under the direction of Dr. David Chin, the performance is a collaboration between Augustana's Bach Collegium and the Augustana Choir. Dr. David Chin is conductor of the Augustana Bach Collegium, and he's a Bach scholar. He sat down with me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls.
So this year we have expanded our choral program at Augustana University School of Music. We have now four choirs. So there's the flagship choir, Augustana Choir, which is more than 100 years old. And so the Augustana Bach Collegium is the newly formed choral and instrumental ensemble where students are dedicated to study and perform music of Johann Sebastian Bach. And so far we have already performed several cantatas and motets. And, of course, the St. John Passion will be the highlight. And we are only 1 year old, but so it's a little bit ambitious. But I think the students are doing very well. And oftentimes we also collaborate with professional musicians in the city. So, for example, like the upcoming concert, we will have several musicians, actually principals from the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra with us. So I think this is a wonderful educational opportunity for our students and also for our community. So the third choir we have is Angelus. It's a treble choir. And it's conducted by Professor Natalie Campbell. Okay. And then we also have the new Viking Corps, which is a tenor and bass choir. So all these four choirs. And Augustana Bach Collegium is the new one, and I'm very privileged to conduct it.
Is this something you were part of making happen, or was that coming into play before you arrived at Augustana?
So I arrived here in September 2023. So this Augustana Bach Collegium was founded a year ago now, so it's the spring of 2024.
Okay.
So yes, I'm very grateful because when I got this job here at Augustana, they didn't just make me fill in a position and teach the classes that they needed, but they actually asked me, you know, what I can bring to the table and things like this. And I have been focusing on the works of Johann Sebastian Bach for more than 12 years now, 15 years almost. So I'm very excited. I think this is a perfect place, you know, in the Midwest, where people have this strong singing culture and also strong Lutheran culture. And I was born and raised Lutheran in Malaysia, but I never heard of Bach music in the church. So so it took a big circle now. I'm also founded Bachfest Malaysia. And we are celebrating 10th anniversary this year,
So
the big festival. So I'm excited. I love Bach. It wasn't always the case, but now I really love it. I want to share my passion of Bach with other people.
So when you get ready for St. John Passion, how do you help the students know more than just the music, the notes? They also need to understand the history, the story. What's the broader experience like of getting ready for the performance?
I mean, one of the privileges of working on this work in a university setting is that it's unlike the past. So this is my eighth time conducting this work.
Okay.
For the past seven times, it has always been with professionals. So usually we come the week before, we put everything together, and then there was the performance. This time is very special because I had 2 months with my students. So every week we meet about 3 times, 15 minutes each, and we could slowly... That's still many music, many movements to cover. There are 40 movements in total.
Oh.
But there's still time to really, you know, sometimes just pause and think about the meaning of the text, for example. And, you know, we're singing everything in German. So I always spend time to tell the students, you know, sometimes word by word what they're singing and what role they're being. For example, sometimes they are the bad guys, like those guys who crucified Jesus. And then some of the time they are just bypasser on the street, you know, asking Peter, for example, oh, aren't you one of the disciple, you know? Sometimes they are the congregation singing a reflective chorale, reflecting what just happened in the story. So I have quite strong confidence that they know almost every movement, what they are singing, because it is important to me that they do that. Otherwise, I think it's meaningless that we are performing a work just to get through the music. And especially in the seasons of Lent, is a perfect way to really reflect on what is going on. I mean, whether or not you are a believer, because this story is the most told story, I think, in history. And it has so many things that are still relevant to us today. You know, we talk about justice, we talk about compassion, we talk about forgiveness, talk about love, we talk about betrayal, we talk about hope, we talk about death, we talk about life, you know. So I also hope that this concert will be not just a musical, but a spiritual experience, both for our performers as well as the audience.
Yeah. How many years ago was this written? Why is Bach still relevant in Malaysia, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, in all over the world?
St. John Passion was premiered in 1724.
Wow.
And this was less than a year since Bach took his final position of his life, which is the last 27 years, where he spent the rest of his life in Leipzig in Germany, where he served as a Thomas Cantor. And why Bach is relevant to us today, I think, first of all these texts in his cantatas and in his Passion, you know, like I said earlier, they deal with matters of life that we are still facing today, whether it most of the time struggles, you know. Mm-hmm. What drawn me to Bach first in the beginning was not the keyboard works. I mean, I was a pianist at first, and I hated playing his music because I felt like so difficult. And like, how could it be possible that a human being would write something so difficult and complicated for another human being to play, you know? So oftentimes, I love Liszt, you know, I love Beethoven, I love Chopin as a pianist, but I didn't like Bach. It was not until I was introduced to his vocal works and that just opened up a whole new world, because Bach is able to use music, the language of music, in so many different musical styles, you know, like from styles dated from 1,000 years before his time to the most contemporary styles during his time. And he was able to use all these musical styles to express many different humanistic values, philosophy, theology, to really make these ideas and make this very careful thought, make them become three-dimensional. And of course, we know that Bach, I believe strongly that Bach was first a theologian and then a musician. I mean, we know we had a copy of his Bible, and it's actually now, I think, it's stored in St. Louis. If you look at his Bible, he full of writing. Like, he knew the Bible so well that I think I believe that he was preaching through his music, you know. And with Bach, the music, there are so many layers. I mean, you could appreciate Bach on a surface level, you know, like, oh, that's a beautiful melody, oh, that's a beautiful harmony. And then when you go a little bit deeper, maybe, wow, how cool is that he was able to combine like the different voices together and make them interesting and things like that. And then you dig a little bit deeper, oh my gosh, there is actually a symmetrical structure, just like St. John Passion, you know. Yeah. There is the central chorale, number 22, which, by the way, we will invite the audience to sing along. There are six chorales, and this is one of them. And in English, in the spirit of Bach and Lutheran, this special chorale, it talks about how Christ was imprisoned, have to suffer imprisonment so that we are being freed. And surrounding this chorale is a bunch of very dramatic moments, like the crucifixion scene, you know, when the religious leaders, they were making fun of Jesus and mocking Jesus, saying that, you know, we have a law, and in this law is that we would not release a prisoner, for example. Right. Or, you know, you have the soldiers tossing his clothes everywhere. It's very dramatic, and it's really interesting how Bach, even in such a heavy and really difficult storyline, that he was able to put in some very fast and maybe, even charming, but, you know, in a bad way, because the soldiers were having fun. They were tossing his clothes around. So suddenly you have some sort of drama relief, but we know that at the same time Jesus was suffering. So it's so rich and it's so wonderful. And then this chorale in the middle of the story. So the story is based on John chapter 18 and 19, so the very familiar Passion story. But Bach didn't just put music to the story and give it to you, but he would pause between the storylines and insert some poetry, some chorales, sometimes in the form of solo arias and recitative, where the soloist will reflect what just happened, and sometimes it is for the audience, the congregation, to reflect what just happened in the story. So it's like, okay, let's pause a moment. Let's think about what just happened, and then let's move on with the story.
Wow. How did he get to be Bach? I mean, did he study? Did he have, like, who? It just feels like what you're describing, and I could listen to you talk about him all, all day. I have, like, a tear in my eye from the passion of the story itself. But do we know, was it just the amount of time that he, that he spent studying and working? He was very productive throughout his life.
You know, I thought about this a lot, especially during the pandemic, when I was in my bedroom for almost 2 years in Malaysia. We were not as free as here, you know. I mean, here is, relatively speaking, a little more free, and also in Europe. But in Malaysia, I started to question myself. I say, look, I worked so hard. I have done all the things I need to get to where I was. You know, I went to a good, very, very good music schools. I work very hard, and I'm also an entrepreneur. I went above and beyond. I ask God, I say, why am I sitting in my bedroom while all my friends in the US and Europe, they are performing from cathedral to cathedrals, from concert halls to concert halls? I say, what is it? Have I done wrong? And I even blame God. I say, it's you. You let me born in Malaysia, and that's the problem. And you let me fall in love with Johann Sebastian Bach, a dead white composer. It is your fault. It's not me. And then after very soon, I realized, you know, that's the reason why God let me born in Malaysia, because I have work to do, to be done in that part of the world. Isn't that also Johann Sebastian Bach and all these great heroes and great people that we study today? They are like you and I. They didn't get to choose where and when they were born and what kind of race or family situation they were born into. But I think what makes these great people great is that they responded to their calling. They were clear about why they were being put in this world. And I believe this is not something exclusive for every one of us, whether you are a doctor, you are an engineer, you are a broadcaster, or you are a family man, or you are a stay-home dad or stay-home mom, or you are a cleaner. Whatever you are, there is a purpose that we are being placed on this in this world. And suddenly I realized that, well, you know, there's no way that, look at Bach's life. I mean, now we look at him as this glorious father of Western music. But during his time, he hated his job. He didn't want to be in Leipzig. And he constantly suffered from money problems and also lack of talents to perform his work. I have to tell you, I can guarantee what the performance that you'll be hearing next Tuesday would be much better than what Bach heard during his time. Because in his letters, we know that he didn't have good musicians in Leipzig, and he's constantly struggling with finding good musicians, and he was fighting with his employers. So during the pandemic, when I was, I also produced a documentary, it's called Encountering Bach, and went through his life, I also translated his biography. And what I learned from Bach is, if you let me choose, I don't want to live in Bach's time. I mean, the medical system was so bad. I mean, there was no healthcare. Yeah. And if you read the books, you know that the world was filthy at the time. And people was like taking shower maybe once a month, you know. And the way they are, I mean, I don't want to live in that world. You know, if you think about Martin Luther, even worse. But what I learned from them, what I learned from Bach particularly is, regardless of the limited resources, he never tolerated the quality and the standard of his composition. He always went above and beyond because he knew so clearly that this is not just for this world. I mean, the music that he was writing was a response between him and God, like how he responds to the gifts that he has been given. So I think this is a great lesson for us to learn. And most of the time we compare and we complain about our lives. We forget to realize that the place that we are in right now at this moment, in this time of history, there is a specific reason why we are being placed here, and we have important responsibilities to fulfill.
Yeah.
And those are some of the things I have also shared with my students during the rehearsals.
That's Dr. David Chin, conductor of the Augustana Bach Collegium. Collegium, by the way, is a group of people who roughly have the same amount of influence and authority in the group. I had to look that one up. You can see the St. John Passion on Tuesday, April 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Cathedral of St. Joseph in Sioux Falls. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. April is National Poetry Month, so we're going to check in now with our state poet laureate. Bruce Roseland is in the middle of a very busy month, but he found time to connect from his ranch in north central South Dakota.
T.S. Eliot went ahead and said, April is the cruelest month. Me being a farmer rancher, actually, it's the month I enjoy the most, seeing all this new life popping up. He must have had a different April than I have.
He did not have April in South Dakota. He did not have the benefit of that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the South Dakota Poetry Society and Poetry on the Road first, and then we'll get into an upcoming anthology and a call for submissions, and then some personal news for you.
Yeah.
So let's begin with how the Poetry Society and you are going to bring poetry to the people of South Dakota throughout the month.
Well, we've kind of already have. We've been having this Poetry on the Road, which we've had through the last fall and through this winter. April has had a number of places, four so far, two more to go toward the end of April. Then we're kind of wound down then. There's one in Spearfish. We did our season. And we've had enough success that we're pretty much, we'll go and do it again. This is our second year. The first year we went 17 different cities, towns. This year, it is 19.
Wow.
And essentially, if you invite us, we will show up. So,
what have those events been like? What have you learned about poetry in the state and the poets in the state?
It's live and well. You know, that's the essential part of it. And I got to go back just a little bit real quick. 20-some years ago, when I first started out in this poetry business, I wrote a book, it worked out, and so I was going around peddling it. And what I ran into at that time was everybody asked the same question, you know, where can I read? You know, is there any venues I can go to? And the crazy part about it was that there'd be people living like within 50 miles of each other, and they had no idea the other person existed, and they were kind of writing about the same stuff. So I ran into the South Dakota State Poetry Society. I joined them, and that's one thing I've been, I and the society together had been working on since then, is providing more opportunities, more places to read, just more places to publish, so on and so forth, more places to be heard. And I think we can always do a better job, but what we found out is that indeed people show up. A lot of people have never read before. That's what they say. They get up and say, "Oh, I've never read before." So it's a big thing for them. The variety, the content. We've had everybody from a 4-year-old. Now, she wrote the poem. The mother read it because she was standing alongside. We've had a 4-year-old read. We've had a number of grade schoolers, quite a few high schoolers. And those who were in their 90s, you know, have been writing for years and years, and we didn't know anything about them. It's the way people share their values, what's going on in their lives. It's a method of communication, and it's something that I think a lot of people are able to do, you know, put their thoughts down, organize them. And when you read them, you're heard. What they do is they talk from their heart and their personal lives. I gotta say this, quality, unbelievable.
Let's talk about the new anthology then. There was a South Dakota poetry anthology under Poet Laureate Christine Stewart. Now there's an opening for new voices. Tell us too a little bit about the history of anthologies for the Poetry Society and what you're working on for the upcoming anthology.
Well, Christine's was the first anthology actually ever done by the Poetry Society. I'm not absolutely sure. There may have been something back in the 50s. And I thought when Christine did it, I thought that is a really good idea. It should be done again. And if I became Poet Laureate, I thought, well, okay. And I kind of hope that maybe future Poet Laureates in South Dakota will go ahead and continue this, like a snapshot of South Dakota. In my particular anthology, I wanted to make it about South Dakota. People who have been either living in South Dakota now or influenced by South Dakota and write about a person, a place, event, plant, mineral, animal, whatever, but it has to be South Dakota. We'll see how it goes. It opened up April 1st. We're going to leave it open for quite a while, August 1st. And then hopefully we're going to get her out fall sometimes. I don't know if it'll be for the Festival of Books or not, but we're kind of aiming for that. We particularly want to have voices from our various reservation system, Native Americans in South Dakota, to go ahead and contribute to this. We want it as broad as we can possibly get it. So we're trying to get the word out everywhere.
Now, you've had so many experiences with people who have never read their poetry in a group. Now they're doing something different, which is submitting it for publication. What are some of the things that you want people to understand about submitting?
To simplify this, no more than three poems. I want your best stuff. And I am not the best editor or critic or whatever. I like what I like, okay? And but that's one reason why I got two other people looking in on this.
You have written a book that we talked about recently about someone who wears his heart on his sleeve every once in a while, Earl, and you're headed off to collect a prize. Tell us a little bit about some of the recognition that that book is getting.
Earl won a Wrangler. My wife and I, Julianne, are getting on a plane Friday, flying to Oklahoma City, and at the Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Oklahoma City, they're having their thing. I don't know exactly what it's going to be like this time. 2008, I had a stroke of lightning hit me. Pretty close. And my first book won a Wrangler, which encouraged me to keep writing. It was bigger than I thought it was. It was that museum is huge. They have a whole village there under a roof. I mean, I was there, people going in and out of the door, and I opened up the door, and there was a whole village in there. It was crazy. They got rooms full of paintings, and they got bulls and bucking horses buried in their out in their garden grounds. It's crazy. But there was 1,200 people for the award ceremony. It's black tie. I will be wearing a tux. So,
Well,
gotta go ahead and have a little giggle over that one.
Badger Clark wear tuxes often, do you think? Oh,
Not
wait.
often, not often.
And neither do you, probably very often.
Neither, I usually have different day-to-day garb.
Well, that's why people get into poetry, for the formal wear.
No.
No.
Anyway, I'm going to get a horse with a cowboy sitting on it. I think it weighs something like 17 pound bronze.
Wow.
And that's part of the
Congratulations.
ceremony that's kind of crazy. People, they're holding it with two hands, and you walk up to get it. And I was watching other people beforehand to get it. And what happens is they go and reach it, and they don't realize how heavy it is, so their arm just goes straight down. Kind of comical.
Well, congratulations to our poet laureate for that Wrangler Award.
Yeah, Brooks and Dunn is being honored this year. An episode of Yellowstone is being honored this year. So it's great to stand alongside of some very accomplished people.
What does it mean then, when you get published for the first time, when you submit a poem to an anthology, when you get an award? When you read for an audience and they applaud you, or someone comes up to you afterwards and says, "I just loved your work, even most of all," what does that mean for a poet? Somebody who has labored over the words, who's labored over the idea, who's shared their heart a little bit.
I think most poems are, a lot of poems are very much personal and from people's personal experience, from their hearts. And it takes a lot of courage. It gets easier over time, but it takes a lot of courage to go ahead and expose yourself that way because, you feel like everybody's so critical. And when I first started reading, I was terribly nervous. I thought, standing up there with my sheet of paper, and I was afraid everybody's going to start laughing. And then I quickly learned that people want you to succeed. It's just that simple. They want you to succeed. It's a friendly audience, and they got all the patience with you and everything. So you get up there and you read, and I've heard people read just terrible things that have happened in their life. I mean, just heart-rending. And when they get done, we applaud and everything, but the deal of it is what I'm applauding is their courage to go ahead. And the reason why they say these things is so that other people will understand. And I think that's probably the best thing that happens in poetry is we understand another viewpoint. We understand, yeah, walking in a mile in somebody else's shoes. And that is a wonderful thing. And that's something we can do personally. How many people are going to write a novel and get up and read the novel and anybody's going to stand around and listen to the whole novel? But you can show a slice of that life. And that's, I think, the value of the poetry. So how do people feel about that? Acceptance, being seen, and then when they get the feedback, that they get the encouragement of going, this is okay, I can do this again. So that's the whole process. And then you find there's other people who are interested in this and got the tolerance for it and the patience and they like what you're doing. So there's that feedback back and forth. So you talk to them, they talk to you, and yeah, friendships are formed.
Do you have something to read for us today? Something you want to leave us with?
You got time for two?
Yes, please.
Most of these poems I enjoy reading a lot, so I'm going to read them. And the first poem is A Prairie Prayer. And this was in my head over a period of something like 10, 15, 20 years before I finally wrote it down, because I went and got my education and I came back to South Dakota. And I was wondering if I had what it took to make it. And that ended up not being a joke, because I came back right in the beginning of the farm crisis back in the 80s. So it's called A Prairie Prayer. Here on this arc of grass, sun, and sky, I'll stay and see if I thrive. Others leave. They say it's too hard. I say, hammer my spirit thin, spread it horizon to horizon. See if I break. Let the blizzards hit my face. Let my skin feel the winter's freeze. Let the heat of summer's extreme try to sear the flesh from my bones. Do I have what it takes to survive? Or will I shatter and break? Hammer me thin, stretch me from horizon to horizon. I need to know the character that lies within. I want to touch a little further beyond my reach for the something that I seek. Only then let my spirit be released. And the other one, I love the night sky. And in South Dakota, especially where I live, you get view of your night sky. All you have to do is walk out of your house and there's no lights around you or anything, and there it is. And I always, in childhood, and I think a lot of people are the same, love the full moon nights. There's just something about a full moon. Well, this is called moonshine. There's always something mystical about a sky lighted by moonshine. Stars are present, but gentler. Clouds floating across the night sky are translucent white. The moon-lighted earth can be traveled about without need of any additional light. I have stood in the middle of my yard and read a newspaper by moonshine. When was it that we became afraid of the dark like death, hiding in our cities of light? In doing so, we lost that half of the night that is moonshine. With the full moon upon the countryside, it's easy to imagine walking out, driving over the land, disappearing into the shadows to find the mystery that you know has always been on the very edge of your life. Find a road, follow the moonshine.
That's South Dakota's Poet Laureate, Bruce Roseland. We'll have links to the programs and events he mentioned at sdpb.org/news. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Every Friday for the past few weeks, you have heard performances from the Rapid City Arts Council's Emerging Performing Artists Program. We are bringing you another moment in sound today. Chaitanya Sky is a singer-songwriter in Rapid City. She joined us in SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio.
I don't know. I picked up a Sears Silvertone guitar. And, oh boy, if you know anything about the action, what's called action on a guitar, it's the kind of the distance between the strings and the neck. And this thing was like the Grand Canyon. And it really, my fingers really got tough on that one. They have grooves in them to this day still from trying to press down the strings on that one.
Yeah. Your fingerprints have been forever altered by the Silvertone guitar. Your identity has shifted being a musician. Look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, so what was it that appealed to you about music that you kept wanting to find the next guitar? You kept wanting to find an audience right away? How did you go from playing for yourself to playing for others?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a long story, but I was inspired by, growing up with the Beatles and Dylan and Joni Mitchell and Simon and Garfunkel and all that stuff. And I just loved kind of the guitar music that they were doing, and I wanted to kind of replicate that myself. Yeah. And I'm something of a recluse, so once I learned how to play a few chords and I started to I loved the creative process and started writing songs, and soon discovered that I don't know how to sing, which is a problem. One of the first songs I ever wrote, I went to an open mic in Seattle and played it, and it was not in a good key for my voice.
Okay.
And it was like, oh my goodness. But everybody was so, just supportive in those open mics that they all just clapped and cheered. And but I was like, oh boy.
I would love to hear your first song. Tell us a little bit what you might sing for us now, and then take it away. Yeah.
Yeah. This is called Patience of a Seed. Of a seed in the winter waiting to be free, I would learn to sing my songs in the key of spring, and I would learn to dance in the falling rain. If I had the patience of a seed in the winter, waiting to be free, I would love to be your friend, letting you touch my soul again, and then in any kind of storm, we'd be safe, oh, we'd be warm. If I had the patience of a seed in the winter, waiting to be free. To you, joy like the daffodils. Oh, yes, I would, yes, I will give you joy like the daffodils. Then, in any kind of storm, we'd be safe. Oh, we'd be warm. If I of a seed in the winter, waiting to be free. We could learn to sing our songs in the key of spring, in the falling rain. If I had the patience of a sea in the winter, waiting to be free.
Titania Sky, for A Moment in Sound here from our Black Hills studios on SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment. That is a beautiful song. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
I just wrote down In the Key of Spring, and I'm going to carry that with me like a little seed in my heart on these hard, hard days. I'm very curious, as I'm reading about your work, you also learned how to play Sanskrit chants and mantras.
Yeah.
As part of a community sing-along. I would love to hear more about what that is and how you got pulled in that direction.
Sure. While living in Seattle, I've always been interested in the kind of the Eastern philosophy and things like that. Mm-hmm. I read A History of the World when I was 10 years old by H.G. Wells, of all people. And author of Time Machine, yep. His view of the world was interesting, and he really liked Hinduism and Buddhism and all that stuff, and that was the first time I'd ever knew anything about it when I was 10. So I've been interested in it ever since, and was interested in yoga, and I read a book called Autobiography of a Yogi back in 1970. And lo and behold, there was a group in Seattle that followed the teachings of this guy, Paramahansa Yogananda. And I ended up taking some classes, and I ended up living in their little community.
Wow.
And so, yeah, and playing the guitar, they said, oh, hey, we do this thing where we sing and chant together. Would you like to take part in that? Sure.
Oh, wow. What did the music mean in that context? Is that different than playing a song that you have written? I mean, what is the role of what is your role in that moment?
Yeah. I mean, there are similarities, but it is different. I mean, I kind of get into a, as you could tell by the patience of a seed, I sort of get into a trance sort of thing.
Yeah.
But this is specifically chanting and mantras is to center yourself and quiet the mind of all the stuff going on there and open up the heart. It's a very heart-opening experience. And then when you're doing it with many other people, the energy is just amazing.
Did you bring one more song with you today for us?
I would love
to hear another.
And we'd go on these hikes behind my cabin up to the ridge top behind me, which I could overlook the Wenatchee River Valley and the crest of the Cascades, which usually had some snow on them. So it was just beautiful. But one day I was walking up there. I was about halfway up the hilltop, and I heard this hawk off in the distance. Yeah. And so I, of course, stopped and turned around to look, and there they were, just this tiny little speck way up in the air, circling around, looking for something to eat. And I then went on my way, and just a few steps later, I heard the same cry out of the hawk, and it flew right over my head, like 10, 15 feet above me. Hmm. And a red-tailed hawk has a 6-foot wingspan, and I could see all the feathers underneath there, and I'm thinking, oh, am I his lunch or what? What's going on here? He circled around me, and he sat down on a little tree right in front of me. It was about 15 feet off the ground, and just sat there and stared at me. So, of course, I stared back, and eventually he flew off. And when I got back from my hike, I picked up my guitar, and this little song just was there. I mean, I feel like I didn't even have to write it or anything. I just started playing some chords, and these words came out. And I feel like the spirit of the hawk gave me this song. It's called the Wild Bird Song. High on the hillside, I heard the wild birds cry. High on the hillside, I heard the wild birds cry. You came to me so wild and free, brought a tear to my eye. He looked at me from the top of a tree and gave me the eye. This is a true story now. I looked at him and asked him, what's it like to fly? Well, you know, he said, catch the wind, let's go for a spin. Open your wings so wide. Ooh, I am the one within everything, earth, sea, and sky. So there on that hill, I breathed my fill. I turned and faced the wind. Oh, I could see above the trees. Took me in. So catch the wind, let's go for a spin. Open your heart so wide. I am the one within everything, earth, sea, and sky.
Moment in Sound with Chaitanya Sky, singer-songwriter and emerging performing artist in the Black Hills. We will have links at sdpb.org/news to help you find her music. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you in the moment. It is produced by Ari Youngerman and Ellen Kester. Kara Hetland is our executive producer. Colton Nicholson is our engineer. Jordan Henderson is our videographer. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.